Good morning. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large for Sunday, June 1st, 2014. I'm Christina Karnatz.
I'm Kyle Kellums. KUAF is supported by Aurora Digital Signage, where images and videos can be instantly uploaded and displayed on multiple screens and locations, leading to improved communication in hotels, museums, restaurants, retail environments, and school systems. AuroraDigitalSignage.com for more information.
Ahead on this edition of Weekend Ozarks, we'll hear the pitter-patter of mini feet. Young, old, male, or female. If you're interested in running, we'll have tips on how to get started.
Plus, a celebration of the life of Maya Angelou in a special edition of Arkansongs. Becca Martin Brown has What's Up for your Sunday afternoon and our Sunday morning montage.
But first, David Pryor served more than 24 years in Washington as a senator and representative for Arkansas's 4th District. Between his stints in either chamber, Pryor also served as the 39th governor of Arkansas. In conjunction with the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, he gave a lecture this week at the University of Arkansas Global Campus in downtown Fayetteville. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis attended the lecture, and here is his report.
The dysfunction of Congress was the topic of last night's lecture. Pryor said that the topic is on the minds of many in the nation.
Today, about 85% of the American people say that our Congress is dysfunctional. That's not a very good record for this particular Congress, but it is the record that most people believe in, it is the record that most people adhere to, and it is something that I think our time and our generation, we have got to address.
He said that Congress now has the lowest approval rating in history. According to Gallup polls, Congress's approval rate was about 15% in March. To further explain how he feels Congress got in its current position, Pryor explained that throughout the political history of the U.S., certain statements by political leaders have taken on lives of their own.
Martin Luther King, I have a dream. FDR, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Al Haig, I'm in charge here. Ronald Reagan, tear down this wall, Mr. Gorbachev. Lloyd Benson, when he was with Dan Quayle debating, Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy. We all remember that statement. But tonight, for a few minutes, I hope you'll allow me to paraphrase and expand on another famous statement delivered by a very famous man, Speaker Tip O'Neill. His admonition when he made the statement, all politics is local. I'd like to take Tip O'Neill's statement and expand it. When he said all politics is local, I maintain all politics is personal.
He posited that politics are personal on all levels of government, from municipal to state to national. But Pryor says that that relationship between those who govern and the governed is being lost.
Blame the Democrats. Blame the Republicans. Blame Nancy Pelosi. Blame the president. Blame the lawyers. Blame the preachers. Blame the media. Blame the courts. Blame the Tea Party. Blame everyone you'd like to blame and everything you can think of. But the truth is, there's enough blame to go around. There's an abundance of blame to go around. At the bottom line is, down in Winslow this morning, I'm sure there was somebody sitting around on a bench saying, we're in a fix. And we are in a fix. The government, to function, has got to have one thing to function properly, and that's the trust of its people.
Pryor says that in order for the government to carry out its business, like providing for the general welfare of the nation and maintaining national defense, it must have the trust of the public, which he says is slowly being lost. To give more insight, Pryor compared what is happening in Congress today to how the legislature operated when he was in Washington.
Today, in the House and the Senate, they meet less and less. They vote fewer times each week and each month. Recorded votes are becoming more rare with each passing day. There's still 535 people in the House and Senate that compose our Congress, as we call them. The numbers have not changed, but I can tell you the political environment is very, very different today. than it was 20 or 25 years ago.
He said that there are several root causes as to how Congress got into its current dysfunctional environment.
When a member of the U.S. House of Representatives is elected to Congress today, 2 years later, he has to go through that same election, and the day after election, that new member of Congress, most of the time, will start his campaign anew by raising money. The morning after the election, they start fundraising for the cycle. Almost some of the same senatorial Senate seats are today costing millions and millions of dollars.
While the senior Pryor avoided making a campaign speech for his son's ongoing re-election bid, he did say that the current Senate campaign will likely be the most expensive political race in Arkansas political history. But the rising expense of campaigning isn't limited to Arkansas. Pryor says that the ballooning cost of running for office is happening across the country. And with the rising cost of campaigning comes the need for members of Congress to jet-set around the country to raise the funds necessary for a successful campaign and return to Washington for votes through the middle of the week, only to repeat the cycle with every passing week.
They're trapped today in a web which has become more vicious with each passing election. They're running in place. They are today on a human treadmill. And I don't see anything that's going to slow that treadmill down. The real winners today are the TV stations. They love all this because they're going to make a huge amount of money this year like they have never made before. Senators and congressmen don't have a chance to know one another.
Aside from politicians not having the chance to know one another anymore, Pryor said that another great change in the environment in Washington lies in the greater number of lobbyists who are now active in that city.
25,000 people today are registered as lobbyists in Washington. I like lobbyists. I don't have anything wrong. I think lobbying is a necessary part of our system. But to have 25,000 lobbyists registered and 535 individuals to lobby, you can see that the imbalance is pretty grave.
Pryor also credited the emergence of dark money, or campaign contributions in which the source is legally concealed from the public, as instrumental in changing the political landscape throughout the country.
Usually it's into a Senate race or a House race, but now it's coming into school board and mayor's races. It's coming in at the local level. And there are groups so powerful and so wealthy and so focused on controlling our governmental system that they are willing at the ground level to begin making their mark and beginning their hope that they will achieve control and power in this particular field.
He said that with the Supreme Court's 5-4 decision in Citizens United, a decision that was split along party lines, outside groups are funneling money into rural states like Arkansas and Mississippi, where the cost of television advertisements and thus the cost of entering the political machine is still low when compared to other states like New Jersey. To give another example of how politics is no longer personal, Pryor said that during his time in Congress, members from both sides of the aisle met for potluck suppers every Sunday night.
Democrats and Republicans, can you imagine this? Went to each other's home, and we had potluck suppers, and we visited with one another. We knew their children. They knew ours. We knew their dogs. We knew their parakeets. We knew everything about them as a family and as people. But today, that does not happen. A Republican home or apartment one Sunday night, a Democrat home or apartment the next Sunday night, people, liberal, conservative, whatever, this does not happen. And that is something that helped us to bond as colleagues and friends. And there was no red state, there was no blue state ever discussed at these Sunday night suppers. Politics was personal at that time. and it's got to be personal again.
Pryor said that what came from those Sunday night suppers was relationships between senators, congressmen, and their families. But now that those suppers are a thing of the past, Pryor says that there is a lack of personal relationships between members of the House and Senate and their colleagues on the other side of the aisle. To describe how personal relationships were once a normal part of politics, Pryor told a story about one night he shared on the Senate floor with the then freshman senator, Dan Quayle.
I watched this young senator, and he was pacing the floor, and he was going to Bob Dole, and he was going to Howard Baker, and he was saying, are we going to get out anytime soon? So I went over to the Republican side, and I said, Dan, what's wrong with you? He said, well, my 12-year-old son is getting ready in 30 minutes to play for the Little League Championship out in Maryland, and the leadership tells me there are going to be at least four or five more votes tonight, and they're keeping us here on the floor. I said, Dan, go to that ball game. There will be no more votes tonight on the Senate floor. And Dan Quayle says, how do you know that? I says, because I'm getting ready to get the floor, and I'm going to protect you, and I'm going to filibuster until you get back. And so that was the case. He left, and sure enough, that ended the session for the night, and we voted as we should have in daylight the next day.
Pryor said that perhaps because of that relationship, Dan Quayle never came to Arkansas to help campaign against him. Pryor said that that idea of members of Congress not campaigning against their colleagues has fallen by the wayside along with the personal relationships in Congress. As a result, Pryor says that the art of true negotiations in Washington has suffered.
Because it was at the negotiating table, the attitude was, let's find a way where we can all win. Today, let's find a way where we win and you lose. That's not the way our founding fathers set this system up. The spirit of compromise has forged America's greatest decisions on Social Security, Medicare, GI Bill, Marshall Plan, think of civil rights, each born from compromise, and tedious negotiation, understanding, and all in very, very good faith.
Pryor likened what is happening in Washington to coring an apple, and that Washington's middle core is being hollowed out and thrown away. As a result, some of the current frustration in the country is caused by the debates relating to the filibuster rule.
Today, one senator has the power to bring the Senate to a dead end. The normal number of filibusters starting about 1915 was about one, two, maybe three a year, and it gradually moved up the scale and up the scale. This session alone, 128 cloture petitions have been filed to close off debate and get around the filibuster rule. I truly believe that today we are going to have to address the filibuster rule, and the Senate, though it has protected minorities, it has protected us in many instances, but I think today it has been abused to the extent that we're going to have to look very, very closely at doing away with it.
He said that Congress didn't get into its current dysfunction all at once, but rather it was caused by evolution over time.
Some believe that it was the scorching debate over civil rights that did us in. Some think it was the confirmation hearing of Judge Bork a few years back, or maybe the searing hearing in the Senate over Clarence Thomas. Others say it was the impeachment trial of William Jefferson Clinton that brought the outrage that destroyed the lasting civility honored by time in the United States Senate and the House of Representatives. Well, remember, there are 20,000 lobbyists in Washington, and each one has a cause. Remember the Citizens United decision of 3 years ago, opened the spigots for unlimited flow of what we call today dark money. We don't know who is giving that money. We don't know for what purpose that money is being spent. We don't know the donors. All we know that it is dark. And we're seeing a sign of that darkness today.
But finding solutions to fix what ails Congress is, as Pryor said, the hard part.
As you know, when Will Rogers was confronted about all those German U-boats out there in the Atlantic, he said, oh, that's simple. There's a simple way to deal with those U-boats. And they said, well, Will, how do we do it? We can't find them. He says, drain the ocean. Well, we can't drain the ocean today, nor can we step back and recreate what we have ever had, because it will never be the same.
Pryor said that a first step in solving Congress's dysfunction could be tackling campaign finance reform. In addition, he said that shortening election cycles from their continuous nature and abolishing the filibuster rule are other possible fixes to the regular stalemate in Washington. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs. Maya Angelou was born Marguerite Johnson in St. Louis, Missouri, on April 4th, 1928. She moved to Stamps when her parents split up. Her father put she and her brother alone on a train from California to his mother in Lafayette County, Arkansas. Her brother was four. Maya was 3 years old. Maya Angelou's best-known work is 1969's I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. The book gets its name from a line by poet Paul Laurence Dunbar. And though the autobiographical novel isn't poetry, Angelou is mostly recognized as a poet, especially due to her reading of a poem at fellow Southwest Arkansas-er Bill Clinton's presidential inauguration and her line of Hallmark greeting cards. In the American Civil Rights era, she worked in Dr. Martin Luther King's Southern Christian Leadership Conference. She's also a professor, an Emmy-nominated actress, a Tony-nominated playwright, and a multiple Grammy Award winner for her spoken word albums. However, less mentioned, even less mentioned than her time as a prostitute, is Maya Angelou's time as a calypso singer.
Gone and went, the landlord come to me for the rent. I can't afford even 10% since me man done gone and went.
By November 1956, when Maya Angelou made these recordings, she had already lived quite a life. While still an adolescent, she'd been raped while living back in St. Louis, and as a result of the events, rarely spoke for several years. When she moved back to Stamps, a teacher there named Beulah Flowers introduced her to literature and eventually got her to speak again. In the 1940s, after relocating to San Francisco, California, Angelou studied dance and drama and reportedly became the city's first black female streetcar conductor while still in high school. She'd also become pregnant while in high school and hid the pregnancy so she could graduate. 3 weeks later, she gave birth to her only child, Guy Johnson. By the mid-1950s, Angelou had danced on TV variety shows, toured Europe in a production of Porgy and Bess, sponsored by the State Department, and performed in a calypso-themed stage show.
That is the new calypso bebop.
Interest in calypso music in America was also at its height in the mid and late 1950s through the early 1960s. But a decade prior, Brinkley native Louis Jordan had helped introduce the sound to stateside audiences and was rewarded with several hits. Jordan, like Maya Angelou, wasn't above employing an island-tinged accent to get his musical point across. Angelou gives a nod to Louis Jordan's influence by recording his Run Joe, heard at the opening of this program, and Push Capisci Pie, heard here. She also records one of Louis Jordan's famous duets with Ella Fitzgerald, Stone Cold Dead in the Market.
I ain't beating with the pot any frying pan, bashing with the pot any frying pan, beating with the pot any frying pan, and if I kill him, I try to man his stone cold dead in the market. Stone cold dead in the market. Stone cold dead in the market. And I kill nobody but my husband.
This is Maya Angelou. This is Miss Calypso. They are one and the same, declares the album's original liner notes. On the Miss Calypso album cover, Maya Angelou dances barefoot in front of a campfire in an island scene in a revealing red wrap. She's also falsely said to be 27 and Cuban, with her father described as a full-blooded Watusi.
So me Uncle Willie, feeling rather silly, whispered sweetly to this pretty girl.
In The Heart of a Woman, one volume of her autobiography, Angelou dismisses her calypso time as singing clever little songs only moderately well. Her Tony and Emmy Award nominations, her Pulitzer Prize nomination, her work in the civil rights movement, and of winning Grammys and mentoring Oprah Winfrey were still ahead of her. At that moment, Maya Angelou was Miss Calypso. Here in its entirety is Maya Angelou of Stamps in Lafayette County with Peas and Rice from her 1957 album, Miss Calypso.
My husband is a tropical man, you see. He is a native of Dubladi. In Dubladi, all the natives you see, they love roast pork and rice and peas. Knowing me husband loves rice and peas, being a lady who loves to please, I decided to cook him some. Before me horses started to run, I put the peas in the pot to cook. I get the paper and start to look to see what odds they are giving away. Me favorite horse was running that day. I put the peas in the pot to cook, but me horse was running at 20 to 1, so me peas and the rice come out burn burn. Me peas burn up and me pot get black. Just then me husband, he comes back. Me husband makes a right swing at me. I get mixed up with the rice and the peas. He says, I know this has happened before. I smell a burn burn outside the door. When I come home and me work is done, me house is filled with confusion. You put the peas in the pot to cook, but you too busy to take a look. Me peas in me pot, they both get black. Why don't you marry with the horses and live at the track? A seat in the easy chair right by the door to catch some air. Me husband swing around to knock me down. Me chair fold up and I hit the ground. I jump on me foot and I start to run. Me husband throw at me a pepper can. The pepper fly out and it make me sneeze. I jump in the yard just to catch the breeze. When I think what me husband said, he won't love me till the day I did. It break me heart and it make me cry. Big teardrops fall out me eye. I stay in the yard till late at night. I decide me to face the fight. When I walk in, what do me I see? Me husband in the bed with me racing sheet. I put the peas in the pot to cook. But if my horse comes in at 20 to 1, then me peas and me rice and me pot and me husband burn burn.
Maya Angelou of Stamps in Lafayette County with Peas and Rice from her 1957 album, Miss Calypso. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of FM 89 and Experiment Station Studios. For more information, visit arkansongs.org.
So Brett was standing on a subway platform, sees a stranger walking from person to person, saying to each one, "You, you're in. You, out. You, you can stay." The guy's not violent, doesn't make anybody actually leave, but silly as it sounds,
I found that you can't help but kind of hope that he gives you the thumbs up when your turn comes.
That and other stories about the kindness of strangers this week on This American Life.
Listen Sunday morning at 10 to 91.3 FM.
This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. The addition of the Razorback Regional Greenway to Northwest Arkansas has given residents more opportunities to be active outside. On any given day, people use the trail systems for walking, bicycling, and running. For the latest installment of our monthly sports series, Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has this report on how local residents can become involved in the sport of running.
The trail system in Fayetteville meanders by a number of local businesses, including Fossil Cove Brewing Company. On a warm spring evening, patrons often sit outside sipping local beers. A small group of runners gathers on a sidewalk nearby.
You going to do Meadow Valley?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
Why not?
Okay.
Then we can run up to Gordon Long Park and get water if anybody's about to die.
How far are we going?
These six athletes are members of the Mustache Running Club, which was started by Brian Bailey, owner of the Mustache Goods and Wares. He says the club got started when a group of friends jokingly started calling themselves a running club. Brian says it eventually became a thing, so he printed up t-shirts, and now there's a Facebook page with about 70 members, though Brian says 5 to 15 people regularly participate, depending on the day. Brian is currently training to run a 50K race in 2 weeks, but he hasn't always been a runner.
I was your good, fat, lazy Southern kid, and my wife loves running, fell in love with it in college, and so eventually I figured out if I wanted to hang out with my wife, I had to start running. And here we are. I think I've been running for almost 6.5, 7 years, and I love it. And even when she's hurt and not running, I'm running, and it's part of my lifestyle now.
Brian says he jokes about being unathletic, but he did participate in sports as a kid, like baseball, basketball, and soccer. Since taking up running, Brian has participated in a number of races, including marathons, and says he is still in awe about what he has accomplished.
For me, I still have that feeling of I can't believe I'm doing this every time I'm even 5 miles into a run, much less over 20 miles into a run and doing marathons. And it's a gradual thing. It's most people don't just start off running a long ways, and most people don't do it alone. You know, thankfully there's running stores and running groups, and because it's a hard one just to get out and say I'm going to be a runner without any support, because it can get really lonely.
That camaraderie is something Brian enjoys about running with a group. If he is having a rough time, his fellow runners can help pick him up. Brian says a group offers the chance to talk with friends about life during a long run. It also helps hold him accountable for his running habits. While running seems like it can be a very isolated sport, Brian says it can actually be pretty social.
I've said many times I'm done running marathons, and I just keep doing it. I think it's a product of friendships. And if we're going to keep running long distance together and hanging out every weekend, why not sign up for something? It gives you a goal. And if you feel good, you can try to do a personal best. Or if not, the fun part is you still get a shirt and a medal for finishing. So you can still feel awesome even if you run slow. That's the fun part. When you run races, you see every shape and size and color and men and women. And a lot of times you're like, I can't believe that person's beating me, or I can't believe I beat that person. But it's, you know, unless you're the fast person, like you said earlier, who does run alone and trains alone, it's a lot more social and you can have fun doing it.
It's not uncommon for runners of all shapes and sizes and varying levels of athletic ability to participate in races locally because of how accessible the sport has become in Northwest Arkansas.
For this area, it's so accessible. I mean, you really just need a pair of shoes because our trail system is unbelievable. You know, the running stores we have in town and the races we have in town. You know, in the next year, there's like at least four or five major half marathons within 20 miles of Fayetteville, or including Bentonville as well. There's marathons here, and all the major cities around us have them. It's accessible. You don't have to fly 1,000 miles to do it. And you don't have to race to do it. That's the fun part, is you're going to run past strollers and kids and dogs and bikes, and it's kind of a fun community thing. You start seeing the same faces. I see the same faces every morning or every weekend when we're running and training for races. We're like, oh, they must be doing the same race and going different directions, and makes it fun.
The nonprofit organization Running USA published its inaugural half marathon report in 2010 because of the growth of participation in those races. Because of the growth in another sector of the sport, Running USA published a non-traditional running event special report last month. The study found that in just 5 years, the number of estimated finishers in U.S. non-traditional events has grown from the low six figures in 2009 to about 4 million in 2013. These non-traditional races include 5Ks like the Color Run. For anyone interested in becoming involved in running, Ryan suggests just going for it. He says there are a number of resources online or even locally to help you reach your goal, whatever it may be. Both Fleet Feet and Rush Running Company offer training programs for local runners. In addition to being advantageous for your health, running can also help with self-confidence. Kristen Page is the program director for Girls on the Run of Northwest Arkansas, and she describes the program as a self-confidence and empowering program for girls that happens to have a running component. Girls on the Run was founded in 1996 in Charlotte, North Carolina, and it became the nonprofit organization known as Girls on the Run International in 2000. Girls on the Run of Northwest Arkansas started as an affiliate of the Boys and Girls Club of Benton County in the fall of 2004 with 8 girls and 3 coaches. Since then, more than 5,600 girls have participated in the program in Benton and Washington counties. Kristen, who was not a runner, became involved in the program in 2009. At the time, she was teaching in Rogers and decided to volunteer as a coach when the program was introduced at her elementary school.
And I thought, okay, sure, why not? I'll just, you know, help out, not really knowing anything about the program at all. But because it's not a running program per se, it's more like about character building and dealing with girl issues and social relationships and inner beauty and bullying and all that stuff that girls get into. That is what got me hooked once I got in it and got to see it and have stayed with it ever since. Now, the fact that it has the running component piece is just an added bonus because health and fitness is also important. But we have girls that can run it and run every step, and we have girls that are not runners and they walk, but the goal is just to keep moving.
Girls on the Run is designed for girls in 3rd through 5th grade, and the middle school component called Girls on Track is for girls 6th through 8th grade. Locally, the Girls on the Run program consists of a 10-week curriculum where participants meet twice a week after school for an hour and a half, and it culminates with a 5K running event. For the running component of the program, Kristen says coaches help the girls set personal goals.
We have girls that say they can't run. Okay, so we will suggest, okay, so when you're going around the track, why don't you walk the sides or run the sides and walk the curves, you know, let them set small goals for themselves and then maybe challenge them the next time. Okay, well, if you ran the curves and walked the straights, flip that or run a lap, walk a lap. You know, we just suggest things like that. And typically, once we give them a few ideas like that, they will start setting their own short goals and say, and they'll come and say, well, yesterday I only could run a lap, but today I ran 2 laps without stopping. So it kind of just lets them know that they don't have to get out there and run a 5K the first day. And the activities that go with our workouts kind of let them run a little, walk a little, and they're kind of playing while they do it. So it kind of tricks them a little bit into running, you know, maybe not trick, but, you know, they don't realize how much running they're actually doing, and then they just build up that stamina.
An example of one of those activities is a scavenger hunt, where the girls are asked to look for things like a yellow flower while running. A practice 5K is built into the curriculum so participants can see how they might do in a race prior to the scheduled 5K at the end of the program. Girls on the Run of Northwest Arkansas became a nonprofit in 2009 and is supported through fundraising events and donations. Kristen estimates it costs about $100 to $150 per girl to participate in the program. However, about 98% of the students receive scholarship funding. Having been involved with the program for a few years now, Kristen says she has become more of a runner herself, but it's seen the change in the girls that she enjoys so much.
I had so many students that were insecure with who they were and had trouble making friends, or they were, say, in the 4th grade reading on a 1st grade reading level. And the program is 10 weeks from start to finish. And so there's a lesson, whether it be inner beauty, bullying, nutrition, community service, all that kind of stuff is tied in. And then there's a workout at the end of incorporated into every lesson. At the end of those 10 weeks, the results that I saw in the girls who were struggling that way in their self-confidence, their ability to make friends, if they had trouble with, you know, not telling the truth or the tendency to steal, you know, those kinds of things, completely changes them in 10 weeks. And it's just a program that I believe in, that I hope that Northwest Arkansas will keep around and grow in the future, so that we have all the girls in the 3rd through 5th grade age range can participate in.
More information about this program is available at gotrnwa.org. For details on where the Mustache Running Club will be meeting up next, search for the group on Facebook. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
National Running Day is June 4th. If you want to run in a race next week or in the next few months, you can find a list of races happening around the state this year at arkansasrunner.com. Good morning. It is Sunday, June 1st, 2014. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large, and with me now, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I love announcing new seasons for the theater companies.
And this, it's that time of year.
It's that time. And it's sort of like knowing you're going to have a baby.
Okay.
Which some of us might know something about.
That's right.
Yeah. And it's time to announce the one for the Art Center of the Ozarks. It's going to be so much fun. Summer Musicals, The Sound of Music, which nobody's done around here for a long time. It's a great story. And Betsy Crouch-Jilka, who grew up at the Art Center of the Ozarks, is coming home to play Maria. She's got all sorts of professional experience and educational experience. And she's going to come up and hang out with her parents for the summer, bring the baby, and do Maria. It'll be fun. And John Jefferson, that I was just in Blithe Spirit with, is going to play Captain Von Trapp.
Sounds good.
Then, of course, there is a horror story.
Every season needs one.
Yeah. We're calling it a classic noir thriller. It's called Bad Seed, and it is probably where all of the murderous child stories came from, because it's a fairly old story.
Okay.
That'll be fun.
Anything like Rosemary's Baby or?
No.
Okay.
So probably more like the nasty little Chucky doll, except it's a kid.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's in September. Then Red Riding Hood, a musical for the kids in, let's see, that's September too. So they'll be busy. It's part of their Child's Play series. Then in October, Death by Design, which is a murder mystery that sort of mixes the wit of Noel Coward with the whodunit of Agatha Christie. The ACO audiences love murder mysteries. Love them. So we're trying one in a new spot. They'll be doing the best Christmas pageant ever again. I don't think they can quit doing it until all the kids who want to grow up to play certain roles
get to do them.
Get to do them. So that means never. Then a show that Fayetteville High School did, and I didn't get to see it, Almost Maine.
I think I remember hearing about it, yeah.
It's a love story in funny and unexpected ways. The next Child's Play show, there's two a year, is in March, and it's called Illinois Jane and the Pyramid of Peril.
Okay.
I can hardly wait for this one. The Mysteries of Ancient Egypt and an Adventurous Young Woman, the one I always dreamed about being. And then they're going to wrap up the season with Much Ado About Nothing. Hasn't been Shakespeare on the stage there for a while, and they've always been known for their Shakespeare. So that will be fun, too.
Classic.
And this afternoon, if you're looking for something to do, if you're in the River Valley, Crawford County Chronicles is going to talk about Bonnie and Clyde.
All right, with Warren Blaylock?
Yes.
Yeah.
At the Drennan Scott Historic Site. Did you talk to him?
I've spoken with him a couple of times. He is a really cool old man.
Fun.
Yeah.
And a fun topic around here, because they were all over the place around here. Mountain Street Stage starts today at the Fayetteville Public Library.
Just across the street. I love that.
Today's Isaiah's All-Stars. If you are not there with, I think they bill it as an adult program, but if you're not there with your kids on Sunday afternoon, why not?
It's free.
Free. And the Singing Men of Arkansas will be at a concert celebrating their spring tour of Oklahoma and Texas at 3 o'clock today at Central United Methodist Church in Fayetteville, and that, too, is free.
All right. Thanks, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is Features Editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This week on Backstory, in 1930, a prospector dug a well in East Texas and hit what was at the time the largest known oil field in the world. He thought he had it made, until others dug their own wells there and prices plummeted.
You start to see people threatening violence on pipelines, because if you blow up the pipelines, there's no way to get the oil to market.
The history of oil in America on the next Backstory.
That's Monday at 1 p.m. on KUAF3.
Just a few minutes ago on Weekend Ozarks at Large, we heard a story from our colleague Antoinette Grajeda about running.
We did. She spoke with members of a local running club, in addition to somebody who leads young girls in how to run.
So, our inspiration for our Sunday montage?
Running.
My recital, I think it's very vital to rock
a rhyme.
That's right,
on top.
It's tricky, it's uptight.
Here we go.
It's tricky to rock around. That's right, on time. It's tricky. It's tricky,
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 tricky.
It's tricky to rock around. That's right, on time. It's tricky.
And they're going to the start, and Blake has gone off, and so has Bolt. These two now ahead of the rest of the field, and Usain Bolt is absolutely flying around the top bend into the straight, and Johan Blake in second place. These two running away, and Blake's challenging, but Bolt is there. I'm sure Johan Blake is coming through. Bolt gets it again, and the time 19.32.
Get up.
When we were in the ninth grade, they had us all line up at one end of the schoolyard for this big race to see who was going to represent the school in this track meet.
Mm-hmm.
I was the last one on the end. George was next to me, and Mr. Bevilacqua, the
What's that?
Mr. Bevilacqua, the gym teacher.
Oh, of course.
He was down at the other end. So he yells out, "Ready, on your mark, get set." And I was so keyed up, I just took off. By the time he said go, I was 10 yards ahead of everybody.
No.
Yes. I looked up, I couldn't believe it.
By the time the race was over and I had won, I was shocked. Nobody had noticed the head start.
Really?
Yes, and I had won by so much, a myth began to grow about my speed.
If you'd like to find out what 10 clips you just heard all connected to or somehow related to running, you can go to our webpage, ozarksatlarge.com.
On the next Fresh Air Weekend, actor Chris O'Dowd. He'll talk about playing opposite Kristen Wiig in Bridesmaids, the film that made him famous in America. O'Dowd is nominated for a Tony for his starring performance in Of Mice and Men. And our critic at large, John Powers, tells us about some of the prize-winning films he just saw at the Cannes Film Festival. Join us for Fresh Air Weekend.
Listen to Fresh Air Weekend Sunday evenings at 6 on 91.3 FM.
Coyote Union is one of more than 150 acts performing at Wakarusa Music Festival, which begins later this week. Recently, the Mountain Home-based quintet stopped by KUAF to perform a couple of their original songs, including this one.
Well, this song is kind of just a good old love song. It's kind of a happy, clappy tune that you can kind of get into. So this song is called Unfamiliar Road. One, two, three, four.
Shares of ups and downs, been on both of the sides of this town, from the bar to the church's grounds. And I've tried for years to find what we are, spent all my days looking up at the stars, but I keep coming back. Unfamiliar road. One, two, three, four. The gravel is piercing. My blisters are deep. My head is spinning in circles, it seems. But I'm gonna keep on running. The river is rising. Oh, this much I know. By the time the moon arises, it will be to my door. And the stone, this unfamiliar road.
That was Coyote Union performing inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. For more information, visit coyoteunion.com.
They got started in the bowling alley where I learned to bowl.
That's pretty cool.
FYI, yeah. There in Mountain Home. Support for KUAF also comes from Vetro 1925, offering classic Italian dining with a touch of sophistication. Located just off the square in Fayetteville, Chef Dirks and the staff strive to preserve simple, bold flavors using fresh ingredients. Vetro1925.com for reservations, catering, and private party information and more.
KUAF is supported by ModThink, a social media strategy firm offering team-driven social media solutions for small and medium businesses and organizations. More information available on the web at modthink.com.
It is Trail Mix Day.
It is Trail Mix Day.
As part of Artisphere, this is, in the past, it's been like one day in Bentonville, one day in Fayetteville. This year, boom. It's all in one day.
Well, and it's not just trail mix with like nuts and M&Ms and stuff.
No. It's trail because it's on the event takes place on a trail, and it's a mix of different kind of music.
Right.
So along the way, it's from 1 to 3 this afternoon in Bentonville on the trails around Crystal Bridges. Mm-hmm. Then 5 to 7 this evening along the Frisco Trail, which is a stone's throw from our studio here.
Oh, literally, yeah.
I don't know that literally. You'd have to have a pretty
good
arm.
Okay, well, if you went out on the sidewalk, you could probably...
No.
I don't know.
No.
Okay.
It's close to a literal stone's throw, but maybe Nolan Ryan, I don't know.
All right.
Anyway, it's right behind us, and it goes along the Frisco Trail through Dixon Street and whatnot. Artisphere Festival Orchestra Ensembles will be playing along the way. You can listen to them and move on. Candy Lee and the Sweets, Martha Redbone Trio, Carter Sampson, Smokey and the Mirror, that's two-thirds of Threepenny Acre, Cry You One, which is coming up from New Orleans. And it's all along the trail, those 2 hours. You can sit and listen to one, or you can bounce along and try to hear them all.
That's right. So, I mean, you can bring your bike, you can bring a blanket. You could bring a picnic, too, if you really wanted to.
You could. Yeah. And it's all free.
It is all free. Many of the things of Artisphere are relatively inexpensive or free.
They really are.
Yeah.
The Artisphere Festival Orchestra performances at Walton Arts Center. The tickets begin at $10. Trail mix is free. Much of the art, free. Now, last year, if you recall, trail mix kind of had to be adapted. It wasn't outside.
I mean, it was sort of canceled due to snow. I mean, I wouldn't say canceled, but they moved some of their things inside.
Right.
And which is, I mean, when you're an outdoor event, it's hard to make that transition from indoors.
That was the first, I think it might have actually been May 1st. It was the 1st of May. Mm-hmm. May 1st or May 2nd was trail mix last year with snow. This year it's June 1st. I guarantee no snow.
Right. I think that's safe to say.
We make the 100% money back guarantee no snow.
Right, right. I think high should be about around 80 or so.
Yeah, so it'd be nice.
Yeah, so maybe rain. Can't guarantee no rain. But
oh, you know who else is there that I forgot to mention in that list? A really cool ensemble that will be at the new Mazur art installation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mazur, who is from Ireland originally but now lives here. Mm-hmm. He's moved here. And that's the Street Drum Corps.
Right. And that's that. The Mazur art installation is the really brightly colored, different kind of geometric shaped. It's huge, too.
I love it.
So anyway, the Street Drum Corps. And I thought we'd end with a song from the Street Drum Corps. This is actually a self-titled song. Street Drum Corps. They are a drum ensemble, obviously, but they are celebrating their 10th anniversary this year. And in 2012, they were named the Drum Ensemble of the Year.
By?
Drum Magazine.
They would know what they're talking about.
I mean, they've got to be good.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Huntsville.
Huntsville. Weekend Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Karnetz.
I'm Kyle Kellums. You have the show solo tomorrow at noon. You'll be with Antoinette Tuesday. You'll be with Antoinette Wednesday because I'm working on stories. You and I back together Thursday.
That's right. Thank you so much for listening and have a good Sunday.